The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Time for the Outdoor Report, a Monday edition here, Outdoor Report. That's sponsored by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority on Airway Drive in Medford. And we have Greg Roberts, who, of course, holding down the amazingly big fort over at RogueWeather.com. And, of course, just got back from a wonderful outdoor show over the weekend, the NewsWatch 12 show there. How you doing this morning, Greg? How are things working out?
Well, I'm doing good, and I will never have a chance to hold down a Bigfoot there. You want to talk statistical impossibility.
Well, I just said Big Fort, not Bigfoot, but I guess...
Oh, I thought you said Bigfoot. I choked a little, actually. I'm like, wait, no holding down a Bigfoot.
Hey,
here,
but if you are holding down the Bigfoot, I want to see the video, okay? I really do.
Oh, absolutely. I want to see it, too. See me go arcing through the air going, ah! All the way.
That's too wild then. But, yeah, it was a great outdoors show from all sounds, from all appearances there. It was just a great time for you, huh?
Yeah. Attendance really slow on Friday. But, hey, we had a pretty decent weather day. But Saturday picked up. And then, obviously, yesterday with the rain and the forecast, definitely had people show up. It's always interesting to see what's going to develop at these shows with people bringing me stories and reports. And, yeah, last year for sure, photos of a Bigfoot in Josephine County. But this year, two things happened that were absolutely just incredible off the charts. I had a gentleman reach out to me and say, hey, I know you're doing the wolf talk on Saturday at 5, and, mm-hmm. Well, I've got a hybrid I can bring to have there, and I'm like, well, okay, fine, bring him. And people claim they've got hybrids, and they claim, they're basically a wolf, And I'm always reserving judgment until I see the animal arrive in front of me. Well, Mark Horbin kind of undersold his animal, because when it arrived in front of me at my booth, I was instantly overjoyed and elated.
How big of a wolf hybrid was it, Greg?
He is a very high percent. He's over 70%, and I found out he is a cross between the true native wolf to our area, the northern timber wolf, and a Malamute. The end result was spectacular. You got something with the body mass and the coloring, 100% wolf. He weighed 130 pounds. The only reason I could tell it wasn't a 100%er was the shorter leg length, exactly like what you would see with a dog.
Right.
The ear shape was definitely more dog. And then when he's right in front of me and I can really give him a good look, his snout length was shorter and not as broad as a true 100%er. But if somebody saw Appa, and that is his name, if somebody saw Appa in the woods, they would 100% believe that was a wolf, and I would not blame them, because most people just don't have my knowledge and experience level to look at something like that and see what makes it a hybrid and not a wolf. But Appa was spectacular. He was great with people, and being so high percent wolf, that did surprise me a little bit. Women and girls, he gravitated to them.
Really?
As soon as he appeared at my booth, he instantly drew a crowd. And every woman and girl who started loving on him, he reacted positively. He started leaning into him and go, oh, yeah.
You know, and to think about you. Something which looks very much like a wolf. Hey, did you hang out with the wolves of Yellowstone by chance?
Oh, yeah. No, mm-hmm. I've been doing that throughout the entire show, although because I was so busy here in Medford with people coming up to me and saying hello and then, making the show announcements and then doing my talks, I had the least amount of contact with them that I have had so far through the shows. And I guess that just kind of goes with the territory. But up in Eugene and Roseburg, especially Roseburg, yeah, a lot of contact with them.
All right. Well, I'm glad that it was a... I'm glad it was a great show here, Greg. Hey, Greg, we have Alan who is standing by here. Wanted to ask you a question about, and it has something practical to do with the smoke line or the burn line. You want to feel that one?
Let me just,
Okay, we'll just take it on.
I'm interested to find out what he means.
But, yeah, yeah. How you doing this morning, Alan? What are you thinking?
I'm doing great. What it is I have a burn barrel and I burn cardboard. I've still got Christmas cardboard left to go because in the last 4 months, you call the burn line each day to see if it's okay to burn, and it's always a no. There's only been a handful of burn days in the last 4 months, and they always say because of forecasted inadequate ventilation. And so
right.
As a weather guy, I'd like you to tell me what that means. And is that a legitimate weather forecast? Is that something that
weathermen do? It absolutely is. And what they're doing, and I hate that they do this. They could say it plainer so it's easier for people to understand. What they're telling you is there is a capping inversion in place in the atmosphere that if people start burning, it is going to cause all that smoke to stay down in the lower level, the lowest level of the atmosphere, and it's going to severely degrade air quality.
And that's what they mean. So we've had these continuous inversions now for weeks now? Is that really what we've been having?
Yes.
Oh.
We had a capped inversion over the valley for pretty much the majority of January, except the very beginning part and the very last day. We had a capping inversion that lasted, figure it out, over 3 weeks, but that's not uncommon to see happen, and especially in January. Since that capping inversion broke, though, we have had very few days where burning was not allowed, and definitely a day like today, burning's going to be allowed. There is no inversion in place.
How about that, Alan? You okay?
I'm glad to hear that, but today is a no, and it's a new voice on the line.
Oh, whoops. Yeah, I forgot one thing, wind. If we've got high wind, and we definitely do have a wind advisory in effect in the valley for winds as strong as 45 miles an hour, they could be stronger in the mountains. But yeah, hello, I kept thinking capping inversion. No, today is a no burn because of the wind situation.
So, well, they use the new phrase, unfavorable conditions. That's all they said.
Well, okay. Again, this is something I do not like. They should stop doing that. They know what the unfavorable condition is. Say what the damn unfavorable condition is.
Yeah, you just say it's going to be too windy for outdoor burning safely. Okay, and then everybody's fine. So I think that's what we're looking at here, Alan. So what we want is no inversion, but also mild breezes, if anything, right? Is that pretty much the rule? All right?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Alan, appreciate the call. Good luck on that. Yeah, it is very frustrating, I would imagine, there.
And this is the thing. And, okay, now that we've scratched that scab open, I get so mad about government speak. I hated it when I was in government with the fire department.
Is it almost something where they're like, just kind of, just listen to us, we'll let you know, but it almost seems like it's a hiding of information or hiding of the real reason for something going on.
Yes, and it makes people suspicious. And considering what we've all been through for the last few years, they need to do everything they can to diffuse making people suspicious, which, oh, by the way, the appointment of Dan Bongino as the assistant director of the FBI is going to turn out to be one of the greatest things to ever happen to America.
Well, think about this, though. I mean, you have two people involved, the director of the FBI and also the deputy director that are both serious as a heart attack. And this will be welcome in that organization. If anyone's going to clean it out, though, I think those two will.
Absolutely. Oh. Now, to get back to what we were discussing before our swervance into the burn regulations.
Yeah.
APA was an amazing animal.
There's more APA news. Yep. Okay, I didn't realize that. I thought you pretty much wrapped that. Okay.
No, because I am happy to announce we will be doing a wolf town hall here in Medford coming up. I will announce day and time. I've got to work out a location. Appa will be there.
Oh, cool.
I'm totally comfortable with that animal being around people, and he can tolerate it pretty well. And the only time he did anything that it was kind of a, that's interesting, we had about a 4 or 5 year old little kid just suddenly bolt out of his chair in the Sportsman's Theater and take off, and it startled him, and he just kind of did this kind of growl.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew as soon as I heard it, he got startled by the kid. It wasn't, you know, it's his form of going, ooh, you scared me.
Well, I'll tell you what, just keep us in the loop on that. How did the Bigfoot meeting go last Thursday? Was that Thursday you did that? It was Thursday, wasn't it? Thursday night?
This
was at the in Butte Falls. Butte Falls, right?
Yeah. I wasn't sure what the turnout would be like. Starting at 4 p.m. on a Thursday. They have been doing these various, you know, Jackson County Library presents events about different things in the Library of Butte Falls, and the person who coordinates it said the biggest turnout they had ever had was 8 people. Well, the Bigfoot talk drew 22.
Very good. I'm glad that it was a good turnout. We talked about it that morning before you took off.
Almost everybody who showed up said they heard us talking about it. We had a guy drive up from Ashland. We had multiple people drive up from Medford. The guy who won the Bigfoot cardboard cutout, life-size, is a guy I have known since 1988. He just kind of lives the life on the road. He was passing through, heard us talking about it. He goes, I got to go see Greg, and he's all about Bigfoot. So he totally shocked me being there. He was probably one of the last people I ever would have thought would show up, and he did, and he won the life-size Bigfoot cutout. My old friend, Robert Robo Linkus. So,
oh, I know Robo. Gosh, I used to talk to Robo. In fact, I talked to him, I think, last week on something else. But, you know, I used to talk to him all the time when I was, I was on this frequency, but doing rock radio back in the day, in the late 90s, you know?
Yeah, he's all about that, too, so I have no doubt. But the other thing, in addition to doing a Wolf Town Hall, we absolutely have to do a Bigfoot Town Hall and give people an opportunity to win an outing with me.
Okay, well, how about you just combine the two, make it a Big Wolf, Wolf Town Hall, huh?
Here's why. There is so much to discuss and present about wolves that it's its own presentation, and then obviously Bigfoot is the same thing. The guy who won the outing with me in Butte Falls, I am extremely delighted about because he is a current Forest Service employee for the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest who has had encounters of his own, and he had reached out to me, and we had talked about this, but when he won the outing with me, he sent me the GPS coordinates of where his encounters had happened, and right smack in the middle of the family group I have been encountering, it's right smack in the middle of that territory. So now I know exactly who it was he encountered. I can't wait to get there myself and then hear his story, where it happened, and then maybe figure out what caused it. And which individual in the group may have been most likely to be the one he encountered.
Greg Roberts, once again, RogueWeather.com with me this morning. And it's the Outdoor Report, and we're definitely talking cryptozoology in the outdoor, I guess we could put it that way. We go to line two. Hi, you're on with Greg. Morning. You have a question?
Yeah, Deplorable Patrick here. Thanks, Bill, and thanks, Greg. Hey. Really looking forward to that Wolf Town Hall. I'll try to be there. But what I'm curious about right now is we hear about, you know, they want to reintroduce wolves, and we got farmers worried about their livestock. My question is this. Are there really, in the real world, attacks on people by wolves?
There have been. It's really rare. We have had 2 confirmed cases here in Oregon where elk hunters had to kill an attacking wolf in self-defense. In both circumstances, the wolf that attacked was a 2-year-old female, and in both circumstances, the hunters were doing things that brought the attack on. Yeah. In both circumstances, the hunters were near a herd of elk. They were working it. They were making elk calls. The wolves happened to be right there. When they hear the hunter making a call that sounds like a lost cow elk, they think there's a cow elk over there all by itself, better target opportunity. They go to it. When they arrive, they do not obviously find the elk. They find the hunter. Now, how many times has this happened where a wolf attack has not occurred? God only knows. But in the two times when it did,
what was it?
The two times where it did, Patrick, instead of fleeing, the fight was on because the wolves decided they were going to have a scrap over the food source.
That makes sense.
And the hunters were by themselves, too. They were solo. They did not have anybody else with them.
If there had been a group of hunters, it probably would not have led to that, I would imagine.
Yeah, if it had been two guys, it probably wouldn't have gone to that. Three guys, absolutely not. I don't see any circumstance where the wolves are going to look at a group of humans and decide, we're going to have the fight. But a guy by himself fights on.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, so are you able to also say that there are times when wolves have gone the other direction when they see people?
Unquestionably, because 99.9% of the time, that is exactly what they're going to do.
All right. Appreciate the call there, DP. 770-5633. Talking the outdoors. A little bit of wolf talk this morning here in the Outdoor Report.
Bill, we haven't even hit the most exciting thing to happen at the show, and it happened on Saturday.
Okay, what's that?
For years, I have received reports of black cougars in this area. ODFW has received them. Oregon State Police game troopers have received them. None of us have ever put our own eyeballs on one or had seen pictures or video we absolutely knew came from here until Saturday, when a high school buddy of mine, who is now a supervisor for ODOT, he runs the prospect maintenance section, and that includes Highway 62, 230, and 138. Last week during the snow, one of his de-icer trucks was operating on Highway 230. They run the dash cam videos to, well, if there's an accident, you know, we've got some video of what may have occurred. But, of course, running their dash cams, they pick up all kinds of wildlife going across those highways. Deer, elk, bear, wolves, and now a jet black cougar.
Wow.
On Highway 230 at about the 7 mile marker. Brian came and showed me the video, and the second I saw it, I knew exactly what it was.
Now, is this something which is a completely a different species, or is it a mutation of the current cougar?
Melanism occurs in cats. It's rarer to see than in canines, and melanism is black coloration.
Oh, okay.
Black cougars, which some people say, there's your black panther. Black cougars have been seen and documented in other parts of the world. We just had never seen something that we could look at on picture or video or know. I mean, no, that's right here.
That's pretty cool.
This one was.
That's pretty darn cool.
As soon as I saw it, and Brian's telling me where this is at, I knew exactly where on Highway 230. And this thing, you see enough of it. I'm trying to get the video from Brian so I can post it at Rogue Weather. You see enough of it to know cougar, and you definitely can see it's black.
Is there any difference in behavior between a black cougar and a non-black cougar?
None.
Okay.
Same cat.
All right. Same cat, just different color. Color. Okay. All right.
And it's so rare to see a black one, but it's, trust me, I have had people tell me, I saw a black cougar near Prospect. I saw a black cougar near Wrangell Gap. Because I have had reports of both from both of those places. And of course, Wrangell Gap is near and dear to your heart.
Sure. Yeah. Wrangell Gap. Man, I'll tell you that, beautiful cat, no doubt, if you were to get it up close.
Yeah. So it's one thing to hear a report minus a picture or video. It's another thing for a guy you've known from high school to walk right up to you at the show and say, take a look at this, and then turn his phone around and show you video that just absolutely blows your mind because you've never seen a picture or video of a black cougar that you absolutely knew was from here.
and maybe we'll start seeing more of those. Let me grab another call here, Mr. Outdoors. Hi, who's this? You're on with Greg. Morning.
Hey, Greg. He is the best guy on Animal Info, I'll tell you. This is Brad with the SLM.
Hi, Brad.
Hey, I'm waiting on the punchline, though, Brad.
No. Hey, I watched the deal on game cameras on the Bigfoot deal. My God, they picked up some great footage all over the Northwest. And the best footage, when they got a really good look at the face, oh, yeah, it definitely looked like Hillary Clinton.
I knew it was coming. Hey, thanks for that, Brad. Let me grab one more here. We could almost make that a dad joke. Even though we'll have another dad joke. Hi, good morning. You're with Greg. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Kerry.
Hey, Kerry.
Greg, it was nice to meet you at the home show or the sports show on Saturday afternoon and get a face to match the voice. Anyway, we enjoyed meeting you. I was the guy with the cowboy hat with the wife. And we came out there.
I remember who you were. Thank you for coming by and saying hi.
Yeah, well, we went out there specifically to see the wolves, and that was our highlight of our Saturday.
Yeah, you know, those wild wolves of Yellowstone, just they're beautiful animals, and I love being able to be around them. It's really fun to watch them get put through their paces and show you their acting ability. The really interesting thing was I had two people here in Medford who complained about the way the handlers provoked that more aggressive response. But, you know, hey, Taylor Sheridan, when he puts those animals into Yellowstone or 1923, sometimes he wants the snarling, ferocious wolf. Well, there were people who didn't care for it, and one person that I know very well walked out as soon as they did that. And I'm like, it's an act. Those animals are very well loved. They're very well cared for. They absolutely love their handlers. And the response basically was, I don't care. I was offended by the way they did it.
Yeah, all right. But sometimes you have to have the snarl. Yeah, you got to get the snarl for the camera, too. Hey, caller, appreciate you checking in there, too, all right? Hey, Greg, before we take off here, we've been talking a lot about outdoors and what you're seeing out there. And a question I had for you is that are we going to go back into winter next week or later this week? Or what's your overall feel on it, huh?
We're going to get a tantalizing preview of I'm not going to say it's outstanding spring weather, but definitely on Thursday, it looks like Thursday's probably going to be the day that we will get the closest we will get to 70 here in Medford so far this year. I have no doubt now we will definitely be seeing some lower, maybe even low mid-70s. What I mean by that, 74, 75, popping in from Siskiyou County, Klamath River Valley, the pocket valleys in southwestern Siskiyou County. That will definitely be Thursday as we reach the peak of the high pressure that's going to give us the break. But then that starts to erode, and by Saturday, we're going to be back to a transition day with the chance for rain coming back. And then next Sunday, definitely going to be rainy, and snow levels will be right now looking like somewhere in the 4,000, 4,500 foot range.
Yeah, pass level.
It stands right now.
Yeah, pass level for sure. All right. Well, Greg, people can keep up with you on all of this and more on rogueweather.com, and I guess we'll talk next Monday, right? Is this going to be one more outdoor show you head to, and then it's done for the season?
Yeah, no, we've got actually two more to come.
Two more.
Reading this week. The next week, we will have a week off, and then we head over the hill to Klamath, and Klamath will be the final show in this group of shows, and that is the 14th to the 16th of March. And then when Klamath is done, we go right back to our traditional Friday.
All right, very good. Hey, thanks again, Greg. We'll talk with you next Monday then, okay? Take care.
You got it, Bill.
Greg Roberts over at RogueWeather.com. Outdoor Report is sponsored by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority on Airway Drive in Medford. 7:36, we'll catch up on the rest of the news here in just a moment. And something I wanted to help you out with here is that you look at these renewals, insurance renewal rates, and I ended up 6 months ago getting a renewal on my car that just about, I think it went up like 20-25%. And I have great driving record, no tickets, three older cars, you know, two good drivers. I mean, just not even a ticket, not even a ticket going through downtown Medford with the 20 mile per hour scammer cam, you know, nothing like that. Going 25% up. It's like, oh, come on, Steve, help me out on this one. Well, he did. Steve Yancey at Sky Park Insurance, and he is an independent insurance agent, works all sorts of miracles for many people. Call him up for a quote at 261-5444. 261-5444, works with many different companies, and he also has brought on Lynn Barton now. Lynn Barton is taking care of Medicare insurance questions, as on the supplementals and the Medicare advantages and various other things. It's really complex. If you're getting ready to turn 65, getting ready to head into the Medicare world, talk with Lynn. She'll really help you out and set you up straight, okay? SkyparkINS.com. Call for your quote, 261-5444. Lynn's number, 499-0958.
At Skypark, we make insurance easy.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable, sleek metal option?
I was just looking at one of the latest dad jokes that got sent to me. Just made me laugh. Okay, another one. I love some of the ones that are coming in. By the way, you can submit dad jokes of the day, and those are sponsored by Two Dogs Fabricating on Bryan Way off Sage Road in Medford. If you have a better dad joke than the one I'm going to share with you right now, just go to twodogsfab.com and email it to them. Other people just email them to me, too, but I'd prefer go over to twodogsfab.com, all right? They have built their business on custom fabrication. They have a new line of Horizon heavy-duty equipment trailers available in 10, 12, 14, 20-foot lengths, sharp-looking all-black, two-tone black and gray and black and tan, all right? Today's dad joke, put a little smile on a semi-rainy Monday morning. Why can't you hear a pterodactyl go to the bathroom? Okay, again, why can't you hear a pterodactyl go to the bathroom? Silly, the P is silent. There we go. Dad jokes of the day. Gentle humor, right? A little bit of that. Now, it's no laughing matter when it comes to dam removal. I don't know if you caught Ashland.news. I'll share that with you here in a little bit. Now, they're coming after Applegate Lake. Possible. I'll share it with you next.
This is Brent with Home and Built Deck and Fence. Many customers in the Rogue Valley ask
Pass and Klamath Falls.
Hi, I'm Lisa with Pacific Service Supply, and I'm on KMED.
Glad you're waking up here. Join in at 770-5633-770-KMED. My email, Bill, at BillMyersShow.com. We'll have some emails of the day coming up in just a little bit. Hey, a couple of things I wanted to mention. First of them was a bit of sad news, but I knew it was going to come at some point. But listener Pat ended up emailing me over the weekend that Terry Welburn of Welburn's Weapons passed away, and he ended up he was a great friend of the show, just a great friend. I hadn't talked to him since I want to say late in December, when the last time I saw him over at the shop. But he had passed away. He had been struggling with some illnesses for a number of years and had been working it. And, gosh, he was just working hard with it. And his wife, Peggy, of course, helping him all through this. And I had not heard anything about this until recently. Pat was trying to get me the message, and it didn't get to me over the weekend. But I hadn't heard anything about this, so I just wanted to make sure that you knew about this. And, of course, the store is still open, as far as I know. And, you know, he was a staunch defender and friend of the Second Amendment and friend of many people around here. I have such wonderful memories of the times going over with him. We ended up, remember one time we went to, did a live broadcast over there. We got an AR-15. We're holding up there at the broadcast. And I'm sure it had to fight. It was about fighting whatever the latest disarming technique that the Oregon State Legislature was doing at that point. There was Terry, always willing to jump in the fight and support it. We had those Father's Day machine gun shoots back in the day that were always so much fun. My son Will still talks about that. One of the ones that that Terry was involved with, and I saved the video of him and the big smile on my son's face with the full automatic, right? And just a great guy, great person, and rest in peace, Terry. And we already miss you. And I know that he's had some real physical struggles for quite some time. And hopefully your ammo can is, well, up there in heaven is never ending. It's like the endless ammo can when you're out there on the gun range. All right. Hope to talk with you about it someday. 747. And another note that I wanted to make sure you knew about is with the fire map. And Jackson County, in fact, we have Commissioner Colleen Roberts involved with this and a bunch of other people. There's going to be a town hall meeting in Jackson County, to repeal the fire map. And this is going to be happening, let's see, it's going to be a week from this Saturday. It's going to be Saturday, March 8th. And this is going to be going on from 2 to 4 in the afternoon at the gym at White House Middle School in White City, 550 Wilson Way. We have Senator Robinson, who is going to be there, Noah Robinson, Representative Emily McIntyre, County Commissioner Colleen Roberts, and a bunch of other elected officials will be there. And Bob Hart, who I've talked to several times over the last few weeks about this, retired land use consultant, acting opponent, fighting it. And so they're going to be talking about still getting the appeal signed. I know there's a lot of rumors that this Senate Bill 762 may be repealed. You keep acting like you're losing until you've won, okay? So, you know, we can't hold up on this one. And if you have not put your appeal in, please do so. March 8th, of course, final weekend before the appeals deadline of March 10th. So bring your questions, let your voices be heard. That's going to be a week from this Saturday at White Mountain Middle School in White City. And I'll post information on that, too. All right. And I had teased a little bit about this before the news break here, and so I wanted to make sure that you know about this. I don't know if you hang out or ever go to ashland.news, but they have an interesting piece there. And when you have the gangrene enviros talking about what is next, I take them seriously as the proverbial heart attack, like we talk about Cash Patel and Dan Bongino. Serious as a heart attack. Tom Holman, serious as a heart attack. And frankly, gangrene serious as a heart attack, too. And there, you knew it was only going to be a matter of time. This was a piece in Ashland.news by Susie Savoy, I think is how you pronounce her name. Dam removal a success on the Klamath. Could Applegate do the same? The largest dam removal project in history was completed last fall, removing four dams to allow the Klamath River to flow free for the first time in a century, opening back up 420 miles of crucial salmon habitat. The results were immediate. Of course, here comes the propaganda, right? In less than a month after the final dam was removed, Chinook salmon returned, and by the next month, threatened coho salmon were spotted above the former dam sites. Astonishingly, 100 Chinook salmon made it all the way up to tributaries in Oregon within the first couple of months, demonstrating the resiliency of nature when it is not blocked by human infrastructure. Of course, I would be very surprised if any of those salmon were able to effectively breed, but we're going to, disregard that for the time being. But dam removal is the best way to bring back a river to life. The Klamath is significant not only because it is the biggest dam removal and river restoration effort in history, gangrene grift translation, but because it shows that we can right historic wrongs and make a big, bold dream a reality for our rivers and communities. This according to Dr. Ann Willis, California director for the organization American Rivers, another gangrene nonprofit. And I thought we were going to be the generation that witnessed the collapse and complete death of the river, said Amy Bowers Cordalis, member of the Yurok Tribe, executive director of the Ridges to Riffles Indigenous Conservation Group, yada, yada, yada. Okay, so you have all the usual suspects in the gangrene world, including the bought-off tribes, in my opinion, joining in. Now that the Klamath dams are removed and the restoration of the Klamath River is underway, many people are turning their attention to other dams in the region with negative ecological consequences that also block fish passage, including Applegate Dam. Applegate Dam has a large environmental impact in the 700-square-mile Applegate River. The dam creates an artificial river system that is more akin to a heavily controlled irrigation ditch than a free-flowing river. But many would like to see the Applegate River flow free again, restored to its natural flow, just like the Klamath. Applegate Dam halts the free flow and exchange of fish, nutrients, and sediments from the upper reaches of the river and headwaters. Since Applegate Dam is used for flood control, it is purposefully left empty most of the winter in case there is a need to hold back water for flood prevention. And then it is emptied again in the summer and fall for fish and irrigation. As I write this article in January 2025, the reservoir is a mere 12% full. Much of the year, Applegate Lake is a glorified mud puddle and a reminder of the clear-cutting, earth-moving, mining, blasting, and flooding of Native American cultural sites that went into creating the reservoir, not to mention the forced displacement of Applegate Valley residents' farms and the settlement of Copper. So here they go. Now, they do admit into this. This is like a 3-4-page article, and I highly recommend you go and take a look at it because we were telling you that first, you know, they came for the Klamath. Next, they'll come for the Applegate, and then they want to take out Lost Creek Lake, too. They do admit, though, that because these dams are publicly owned, that this would be a problem. This would be more of a challenge for them. So just understand that when people are saying, oh, this is a conspiracy theory that the gangrenes want to go after the Applegate and Lost Creek Lake. Oh, no, they're quite open about it. And they were happy to put that over in Ashland.news. Just look for dam removal, the success on the Klamath. Could Applegate do the same? Boy, I have to tell you, people around here remember what it was like before there was flood control on the Applegate. And it was not pretty. Yep, they want it all. The Klamath was not enough. The Klamath is not a one-off. They want them all. These are people who should receive no input whatsoever on this because what they are about is the destruction of life on or near the rivers in the Rogue Valley. But just understand, I mean, they're out in the open about it, and don't let anybody tell you, well, we know that it's just a long-term plan. Don't buy it, okay? 770-5633, you're on the Bill Myers Show.
Hi, it's John at Wellburn's Weapons.
News Talk 106.3 KMED.
This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
On KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford. It's a couple minutes before 8. Hey, there's some other good news over the weekend. Good news, and it has to do with Joy Reid. Joy Reid is going to be leaving MSNBC. No more Joy Reid Show. It's a joyless day on MSNBC. Realistically and frankly, one of the most nasty humans on the face of the planet. Gone. It's okay. And racist, too, on top of that. Some of the most racist statements ever would come out of it. Just amazing that had it come out of a non-person of color's mouth, they would have been hoisted by petards numerous times. But just saying, so that is gone. So that's good news. That is good news. Now, the news that was not so good earlier this morning, I was talking about why Elon Musk needs to have his chain yanked. I'm going to talk more about that with Dr. Dennis Powers, I'm sure, no doubt. This whole idea of sending out emails to the federal workers and say, hey, you tell me, you know, justify your existence today and respond by email. Otherwise, we will have you fired. You know, we're considering that you're resigning. It's like, bad idea, folks. And the only reason I'm going to stick on this is that Trump has a lot of good people that have been put in place. Let them deal with staff cuts. This is nothing that that Elon Musk should be doing with a meat cleaver. He has no idea what a lot of these people are doing. And this is something you let Cash Patel do. This is something that you let Kristi Noem do. This is something that you let, Dan Bongino and Cash Patel do as an example in the FBI. They need to go through their employees and figure out which one are worth keeping. Not who responds properly to an email from Elon Musk. But that's like I said, there's a lot of things Elon Musk has done with Doge that I'm a big fan of and other stuff. Not so much a fan of. And the weekend deal, that was stupid. That was just dumb. That was just tone deaf. And it interrupts momentum. You know, it's just getting to the point. Doing something fast just for the sake of doing it when for all intents and purposes, you are just cutting the knees out, their legs out from underneath your new appointees in the agencies. It's not helpful. I just think that's just dumb, okay? But there is something even dumber than that, though. And this was a good side of Doge that came out. And I don't know if you caught this on Town Hall. Derek Hunter wrote a piece on townhall.com that is possibly the dumbest example of waste that Doge has discovered so far. And it was in the Washington Post last week. And it opens up with this paragraph. This is what Derek Hunter wrote on townhall.com. At California's Yosemite National Park, the Trump administration fired the only locksmith on staff on Friday. He was the sole employee with the keys and the institutional knowledge needed to rescue visitors from locked restrooms. And so Derek rightly poses the question, why is there a locksmith on staff as a locksmith when you could just contract with one when you need one? How often in your life have you said, damn it, why isn't there a locksmith on our staff? At the most, I'd say one time, but the odds are heavily in favor of never. And next, why is this the guy the only person with keys? And that's what I was thinking, too. Why would you have an employee being the only one having any access to the keys? It just seems to be insane. Hey, I have a lot of keys. I have like, 14, 15 different radio sites within our company that I have keys to. And they're sitting on a bunch of key rings, all right? And there are, so this way, if somebody locks themselves out, okay, we've got the keys. Bicoastal Media Medford does not have to have a locksmith on staff, to deal with this. Just astounds me. Now, there's an example of something that could be taken care of in the private sector very easily. You just contract with, the equivalent of like a key guy in Grants Pass or Bear Creek Lock or something. And if you need him, you bring him in, you pay him, life is good. I don't know, maybe they're thinking that because of Yosemite, it's so far out that it would be too expensive, but I'm sorry. How often do you need that, really? It's 3 minutes after 8. KMED, KMED, HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. Let me grab a quick call. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Good morning, Bill. This is David in Phoenix.
Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
Oh, just a curiosity. This has been going on for several years, this dam removal and whatnot.
Yes.
And I always noticed that certain locales is sort of the hotbed for certain groups.
Mm-hmm. In other words, Ashland. In other words, Ashland talent. Right.
Yeah.
And parts of Jacksonville, too. Certainly.
Yeah. But they always want to remove other people's dams. How come Ashland doesn't remove the Hollister Dam? They're not using the water. The Rita Reservoir, that water should flow to keep Bear Creek clean and free. And they're hooked up to the taps, and now they're getting their water from Medford Water Commission. And they use TID irrigation water out of that mud puddle up there of immigrant mud impoundment for irrigation water. So why don't they take out the Hollister Dam first before they want to remove? And people in Portland, why don't they remove Bonneville instead of worrying about the big dams in Idaho? I don't think the people in Idaho.
Believe me, there are many in Portland that would love to remove Bonneville. Seriously, they would. Of course, they're cutting their nose off despite their face, but yeah.
Yeah, watch what happens to their power rates. They'll scream like stuck pigs.
Oh, but it'll be for the benefit of Mother Earth Gaia as the lights go out and more chaotic and intermittent.
They won't have power to run that stupid train of theirs that goes nowhere and people get robbed on. So that's an electric, so they won't have the power for that. What's that going to do? So anyways, I'd like to see Ashland worry about their own crap and not worry about everybody else's dams.
All right. Appreciate the call. Thanks for that. 770-5633. I'll grab one more call before news. Hi, who's this? Good morning.
Bill, good morning to you. It's your friend, Brad.
Hey, Brad.
Hey, so on the idea of the Mustang, his employment test and all this, I think the bigger picture, and I'm not going to argue your point about the hierarchy of who ought to be sending the letters, but
and you can't argue with me about that. I don't think I you're a smart man. You know you can't argue with me about that.
And that's why I'm not going to, Bill. I'm not going to. But I am going to talk about the fact that the strategy side of this is pretty persuasive, which is What we have learned that nobody knew is that hundreds of billions of dollars of government money has been going to fund leftist progressive institutions, and the left needs that money to run on. And big chunks of money come from government labor unions. So the practical side, the strategic side is if you want to play good cop, bad cop, Trump can be the bad cop, you know, just go through with a sweeping, you know, this regulatory acts of his, wipe out tens of thousands of government jobs, maybe even hundreds of thousands of government jobs. Then the directors can bring them back or what have you. But what happens in the short term is all of these union dues that fund leftist progressive causes get turned off in the meantime until they get turned back on again. This is going to have a tremendous influence on the ability of progressives to get their message out.
Okay, that's an alternative way of looking at this. However, the one thing that Trump needs to be able to govern and govern effectively, and if he's destroying the ability of his people to govern and to govern by unwisely putting Elon in charge of just meat axing stuff without any kind of conversation about it, I don't think that's real smart. Okay, I just don't.
I think they're taking your advice, Bill. I don't think they're publicizing it, but my guess is that Trump and Musk are having lots of well, we know neither one of those guys sleeps, right?
Oh, I know, you know. But you also have to remember, everything Elon Musk does is ultimately to free up government money so he can play in Mars. Okay, just remember that. You have to remember that. That even yes, even Saint Elon has an agenda too. Okay, well, that's all I'm saying. All right, thanks, Brad. All right, we'll catch up with more. Dr. Dennis Powers joins me shortly after the Kim Komando Digital Update.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable, sleek metal?